on maynard.com.au. Hey, you! It's time for... Tim, it's pretty exciting. I know this is only our second one for 2015. It finds me, I'm in an angry mood, but let's get the news out of the way. What's been happening in the world of Ferguson?
Well, as usual, nothing is defining me. You know, people say, oh, well, this is terrible, it's not going to define me. Nothing, as usual, is defining me. So it's hard to think of things that have been happening. The Doug Anthony All-Stars did a rehearsal show last night where we rehearsed in front of an audience. We've never done that, and now we know never to do it again.
You might be hearing a slightly different background noise. It's because we are in Fortress Ferguson.
That's right, Fortress Ferguson. The old FF, the hashtag FF.
The fortress of arrogance in which nothing gets in and a little bit gets out occasionally.
There are a lot of feelings bottled up just in this gigantic plaza you see before you.
It's an enormous lounge room here. We've got Star Wars figurines in one corner. Lots and lots of DVDs, mainly The Godfather. That seems to be all you watch.
Well, I watch it again and again, so I need all those copies.
Now, what's your favourite, part four?
We're waiting for that. I want to see The Zombie Godfather, where Michael returns from the dead.
What about is the Doug Anthony All-Star news? Because it is the international year of the Doug Anthony All-Stars. Australia,
God bless Australia. It certainly is, and the international tour is bouncing from town to town, city to city. We're even going to Bathurst. That's right, Bathurst, a place so good they called it Bathurst. It's half Bath and half Erst.
Yeah, well, we have confirmed the Sydney ones at the Seymour Centre. You've got some Newcastle ones coming up in May. Anything been added since last time?
Yeah, the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Ooh.
There's a comedy festival and they do it in Melbourne, of all places, and we're going there. We did the first comedy festival 26 years ago, and we're back to finish, close the comedy festival.
Also this year, as part of the festival, and get your tickets early on this one as well, Damien Cowell, ex-Tism, the Disco Machine Man, he's doing a sort of a Cowell-oke, he's calling it. He's doing a karaoke show where he's going to sing his Disco Machine songs, and he might even do a couple of Tism numbers. Book early for that one, people.
Oh, man. Damien, I feel embarrassed saying his name. I feel embarrassed saying anyone's name from Tism because we're not supposed to know. But Maynard, you know.
Well, no, I don't. In fact, I actually, when I interviewed him, I told him I did not want to know who the other members of Tism are. And, of course, that gets me on to the point of why I'm so... And, look, there's going to be bad language in this episode. Please, your children shouldn't listen. Because I'm really fucking angry about the choice of Eurovision contestant that's been sent to Australia over the year. I'm just so mad I can't even say it.
Well, you've gone and said it, Eurovision. I hope children weren't listening.
Guy Sebastian is going to represent Australia. The 2003 Australian Idol winner, the first one, is going to represent us. I thought that it was bullcrap. Couldn't they get someone with irony? He's a good performer. He can write a song, he can sing a song. I've seen him live, he can perform. But he hasn't got the pizzazz and the presence I feel one needs for a Eurovision performer.
Guy Sebastian is representing Australia at Eurovision.
Yeah.
Where is the irony? Where is what are they going to put him in, spandex? Are they going to give him a mullet cut? Or is he just going to sing like a R&B ballad very well?
Well, he can do that because, you know, you get those entrants at Eurovision that the Ireland do that kind of well occasionally when it's not Jedward. They get the guy who sings the earnest song and everyone goes, yes, that's very nice. I think he might do that.
Wow, that's not as exciting as, for example, Tism, which is what everybody wanted at Eurovision.
Yeah, look, I understand that Ron Hitler-Barassi will not go back with Tism, so, you know, although you could really be anyone, really, and say you're Tism, but I don't think they'd like to do that.
Boy, you're a crock of shit!
It's typical of all the members of the Hitler-Barassi clan to be so negative about such things.
You're basically pretty stupid!
I was big for Gina G. Just a little bit. She's got had a new album out late last year. I think we should have sent Gina G over there and really blitzed it. No.
Danny Minogue, isn't it time she had a second chance?
Put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both up.
course, he's just doing some stuff for Mardi Gras. And happy Mardi Gras to you, Tim.
Happy Mardi Gras to you. And happy Mardi Gras to all of our sodomising listeners.
How come the Doug Anthony All-Stars never got a float in Mardi Gras?
The Doug Anthony All-Stars could have had a float, but it would have seemed nowhere near as much fun as that great Mardi Gras float, which was the JFK limousine.
Oh, yes.
With JFK lying back, his brains all over the vehicle, and Jackie all the way down Oxford Street scrubbing and collecting brain pieces. It was beautiful.
Mrs. Kennedy jumped up. She called, "Oh, no.
Back to Guy Sebastian for a moment. It's like he's the anti-TISM. He's as far away from TISM as you could get.
Well, maybe that's the thing. Maybe the organisers thought, we won't be told by the people. We will make it up ourselves. And so they went for an admittedly very talented, squeaky clean, a Hillsong-washed singer who will certainly not raise eyebrows.
Well, he won't offend anybody.
No, he won't offend anybody. Like most of the acts that have always won at Eurovision, have even ABBA been just a little bit offensive?
I've been asked, any Doug Anthony overseas gigs? We have American and English listeners wanting to know.
Yeah, we do have those in discussion. Cameron P. Mellor, what does the P stand for? I ask him, but apparently he can't tell me. Cameron P. Mellor is in discussions with LA and with London. We were thinking of Edinburgh, but it's so much hard work. You've got to do shows from morning to dusk just to get attention, and I can't be doing that anymore. I'm trying to write a novel.
Two shows a day? How many shows a day were you doing over a week, for example?
Oh, on average, when the All-Stars played Edinburgh for many, many years, we would just do every show we could do and then busk in between those shows, all unpaid until we did our own paid shows in the evening, which is, it's a grueling festival. It's the only way to do it. It's great fun, but like I say, I'm supposed to be writing a novel about kittens and horses and why can't they get along.
We had the very sad news that Leonard Nimoy passed away recently. Mr. Spock, one of my favourite, you being a sci-fi guy. Where do you think he fitted into the pantheon of Star Trek and sci-fi generally?
Oh, he was in the centre. He was at the heart of the first show on American television that mixed black people, Uhura, with Russian people of all things, with Chinese people, with Scottish people, and just put them in a crew where nobody talked about their race. In fact, they were just human beings going out, working together. This was a revolutionary idea. Of course, it was in a show that most people thought was a kid's show, and so Gene Roddenberry got away with it. But Leonard Nimoy was at the heart of that. He was Spock. And as you can see by my Leonard Nimoy toy, which is a beautiful original Leonard Nimoy, he managed for 50 years to have no expression on his face. That's hard if you're an actor.
And look, I wear the Leonard Nimoy pyjamas, and when I wear them, I manage to have no expression on my face, except when I'm on the bus. Then I tend to smile a fair bit, because, fuck, I'm wearing pyjamas on the bus.
And there's a lot of sexual power coming off you when you're wearing your Leonard Nimoy pyjamas.
Well, let's get going with a bit of freaky realistic here doing Call Me Leonard Nimoy, all about being able to hold back your emotions, but in some way a tribute to the great man who is no longer with us. It's pretty much just Shatner these days, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little low, any way the wind blows, doesn't really matter to me.
William Shatner's Pants.
One of the greatest South Australian alternative band's names ever.
It really was very good. But yeah, now there's just the Shat and Uhura, you know, and I don't think they ever got along all that well. It's going to be, you know, very cold in space without Leonard.
Show me your emotion, you cut me far away. corny name for bad boy. Eight ball back and do some damaged jeans. Man, we should dance and touch and say steam. Slow hand crisp down to the core. But if a man try and test, they'll switch to southpaw. Wherever you see, he's P-E-A-C-E. He's taping it easy.
Leonard Nimoy. And speaking of aliens, which we often do on this show,
all the time, aliens, aliens, aliens.
You're listening to Bunga Bunga 12. I suggest you go back and listen to the whole stack of other ones because we've had some winners. And the reason we haven't done any lately is because we're both so busy. Tim's out doing stuff for the Doug Anthony All-Stars and working on a novel and a movie and all sorts of things. Of all things, I'm supporting Village People.
I'm just a gigolo,
gigolo.
And everywhere I go,
gigolo.
People know the part I'm playing.
You're supporting the Village People and not just like a truss. Before the Village People come on stage just tonight, Maynard, you'll be providing music and entertainment?
Oh, look, I'll be playing Groove is in the Heart and Celebration.
At the same time, they sort of phase and you're going to hear Satanic Prayer.
And I'll also be DJing at the Hellfire Club's 22nd birthday at the end of the month. Can you believe that? I'm doing the first hour and they want me to play all tunes from 1993.
The Hellfire Club is 22 years old. That is old enough to have kinky sex.
Did you ever make it along there at all, Tim? Because they had the Hellfire Club in Melbourne where you lived as well for a while as well.
No, I've never been into dressing up in that much sort of spandex and wacky things. As you can see from the plastic that I've lined the floor with, I just have fun at home, you know, where we just get some special people over and they do their little thing and we sit and eat popcorn and watch TV, ignoring them. It hurts them. I mean, it's important for everyone in a relationship to have a gimp in the house.
The name of the person who owned the gimp in Pulp Fiction?
Bring out the gimp. I think the gimp's sleeping. Well, I guess you just have to go wake him up now, won't you?
Who owned the gimp?
Yeah, who owns the gimp?
Zed.
No. Maynard is the name of the person who owns the gimp in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, man, Maynard, you're in a happy family. That's right, Maynard and Zed.
As you can tell, I'm wearing, and as you'll see from the cover art, I'm wearing a Bob Down T-shirt, which I bought probably 89, 90 at his Edinburgh season, and it's rather scary in its magnitude, isn't it, Tim?
Oh, it is truly extraordinary. Bob Down with the longer hair, with the Jamie Redfern pageboy haircut. It's quite an extraordinary look, and he's even got a bit of Liberace bling on. Oh, Bob.
We were talking of aliens earlier, and there has been talk that there are some photos of the Roswell aliens that have surfaced in the form of slides found in the bottom of someone's slide drawer from the 50s or whatever. This is pretty amazing news. Have you heard about this, Tim?
Yes, I have, and it's quite extraordinary. We're all abuzz about this. It seems to lend a lot of credibility to the rumours about Roswell.
Well, yeah, particularly as the way it's being announced, rather than a press conference, a Mexican ufologist has booked a stadium of 10,000 people and is charging everyone to go see the unveiling there.
He will get a big crowd. And it's very hard, as photographers and special effects people will know, to fake a slide. It's very difficult. The theory is that this is real.
In fact, I'm thinking of getting Mexican ufologists put on my business card.
It's the Mexican bit I like.
Hi,
Hey, everybody.
A lot of people want to know, and I want to know, what's the go with all these flags suddenly behind the Australian Prime Minister? We've gone from two back in the day to as many as eight recently.
Yes, the Prime Minister has rather successfully tried to remind the country that he is Australia. He's the heart of Australia. And how do you do this? Well, you stand in front of an abundance of flags. He knew that the Twittersphere, as it's called, and the inner city cafe latte quinoa-sucking dweebs will all carry on because they are at heart anti-Australian, un-Australian. But he also knew this would play well to people who watch the news with the sound down. It makes him look like the spirit of Australia.
Does that mean if you make some sort of statement without a flag behind you that you're with the terrorists? How does that work, Tim?
Well, I think that's the implication. He has more flags than anybody else. If you're voting against him or if your opinion is wavering from the Prime Minister, you are an Australian. You are against the flag itself and probably a terrorist.
I'm just looking around your room, your house, your flat, your fortress. I don't see one Australian flag, Tim.
Ah, yes, but if you fly up about a quarter of a mile and look down, you will see the whole plaza and the gardens are in the shape of an Australian flag.
I've got to say, when I see a tradie driving along in a ute, changing lanes on the M1 or M3 without blink, using a blinker or any sort of indication, wildly cutting in between traffic at 6:30 in the morning on his way to work or half drunk, with his two flags flying, I think there's nothing more Australian than that.
Well, there is not.
And I've spoken to a lot of veterans over the years, from the Second World War to the Malayan emergency to Vietnam vets, and they are okay about maybe changing the flag at a future time. They're mixed on that, half-half. Some think, no, we should keep the flag that they fought under. But they're all universally behind the fact that they really don't like people getting drunk and using it as a cape. They find that even more offensive than everybody voting for a new flag.
Eventually, the Union Jack itself will be meaningless because Britain's going to become a republic before we do. Eventually, just out of sheer embarrassment, we may have to say, OK, thank you very much for going and making sacrifices under this flag. Now we would like to show you how independent we are by coming up with a new one.
And we've already spoken about some of our favourite flags. I'm a big fan of the Brazilian flag. It's colourful. It's got the big round globe on there. We both like what is now the old Libyan flag, which was just green, which you could, you know, on St. Patrick's Day, it could get a bit confusing, but now it's got an Islamic symbol on it because it's changed. But the Libyan flag just used to be just green. That's it.
Oh, I like that. And the Australian one could just be a nice, big, sunburned orange brown eye in the middle of a blue backdrop.
We should call for a sound effect solo. This is where Tim tells me, basically gives me a couple of hours' work by getting a sound effect solo together. Tim, call for a sound effect solo.
A pussycat firing a machine gun at a bucket of water.
There you go, Tim.
Oh, man, you managed to find that. Who knew someone had recorded that?
I'm doing Penrith and Wollongong with village people, which could be an interesting combination. I'll be on the tour bus.
You'll be on the tour bus with who?
Village people.
I'm just a gigolo,
gigolo.
And everywhere I go,
gigolo.
People
gigolo.
Know the part
gigolo.
I'm playing.
Gigolo. Gigolo. Gigolo.
The village people, and in fact, village people without the?
Yes, because they're a collective noun. It's village people, as they say in the movie. Oh, they're from Greenwich Village. They're village people. That's how it happened, you see.
Wow. I had a rumour that...
Haven't you been watching Can't Stop the Music?
Oh, not enough.
Yeah. The name. Village people.
Well, that's not a bad idea. That's what we are.
That's where we're from.
Village people. That's fantastic.
Why are they dressed so funny?
Well, they're from the village. That's why they're called village people.
Oh, right.
I had a rumour that they aren't really an Indian, a cop, and a workman. Is that true?
Felipe Rose is, in fact, a South American native Indian. So, yes, he is. He's from an indigenous tribe in South America. So, yeah, the cop, well, you know, since they've been touring for a while, they haven't been able to go back to their original profession. So the cop really hasn't been writing many tickets in New York lately.
And what are you going to talk about on the tour bus with village people?
I don't know. It depends. Because imagine if you'd been touring since 1978, Tim. You only toured for a couple of years. Imagine if you'd been touring pretty much constantly since 1978. Being on the tour bus could be one of your least favourite places to be. So I'm going to play it by ear. They might, you know, might just be a stunned silence of like, here we go again kind of thing.
Right, so they're not going to be singing YMCA and waving their hands.
Well,
and
you could hope so, but you can imagine since 1978, maybe that had kind of worn off a bit.
I suppose it will have, but don't need to feel down. I said, young man, come on, all together or not at all.
Yeah, I could see me being dropped off at Colo or someplace like that on the way to Wollongong, wherever that is.
Yes, it's going to be a tricky ride, but I dare you, Maynard. I dare you to start, young man, there's no need to feel down. I said, young man, and just see what happens.
Another group that's playing at the is The Reels. Well, not so much The Reels, but Dave Mason from The Reels is doing a couple of shows in Sydney. I don't think he's doing them anywhere else in Australia. He's just doing a couple. I've been trying to get onto them. He hasn't been returning my calls, and I thought we should play a Reels song here. Did you have a favourite Reels song?
Oh, I liked all of them. I think they were fantastic. I had two of their albums.
Quasimodo's Dream would have been one of them.
Quasimodo's Dreams was one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Reels, awesome and so smart, really smart music.
And from that album, the track After the News, which is basically just casually watching the news, perhaps with the sound down, how that could possibly impact you from doing the washing up to just going to bed.
And a little bit political, The Reels.
I think that would be good.
The Reels would be great. They'd turn up, they'd be a little bit sombre, a little bit thoughtful, but they'd be very Euro and hugely Vision.
And of course, Dave would be cranky, but everyone else in the band would be nice and charming.
Oh, that'd all be good. And maybe you could bring on Guy Sebastian to sing the a bit with lots of notes.
Someone has said that Guy Sebastian wasn't Prince Philip available. And of course, as you know, he's been doing all that busking work you pointed out in the last episode. Perhaps Prince Philip could have represented Australia at Eurovision.
Well, I think the Prime Minister pushed that idea first, Maynard, and I'm glad you put it on the table. The Prime Minister wanted that. Prime Minister also wanted Prince Philip to go over and train Iraqi soldiers, which was gracefully declined.
When asked if there was perhaps a more modern group, I think Tony Abbott asked for that group. The Vita Beats are who I'm thinking of. Do you remember the Vita Beats, Tim, here? There is no wrong answer.
Yes, I do.
No, I could have been wrong after all, Tim.
Yeah, I think the Prime Minister also called for the Stooges to play Eurovision, but it turns out that the band is a different kind of Stooges.
We've got a shortened episode because I've got to race off to be with Village People and you've got to race off to do more stuff for the Doug Anthonys. It's getting hard to do episodes, but we are trying to pump them out as much as we can.
Oh, yeah, we are like little suburban Catholics with these Bunga Bunga episodes, and it takes a lot of pushing, a lot of work. But at the end of the day, we end up with a blood-covered infant that screams.
Hey, I think it's you should ask me what's in the bug-out bag, because I've got something.
What's in Maynard's bug-out bag?
That's close enough. This has got to be great. Tim, what do you think of that?
Oh, wow. The secret language of puppies?
Yes, because we got a bit of flack last time for all of our feline cat talk that was going on. This book came in the mail, from Alan and Unwin, The Secret Language of Puppies, which I imagine the first thing you'd want to learn is, could you stop peeing, would be the first thing. What do you see in there, Tim? The secret language of puppies.
When you bring your puppy home, he'll usually be around 8 weeks old and will already have had his first vaccination. Well, there you go, anti-vaccinators.
Yeah.
Most dogs have been vaccinated and you don't see them being autistic, which is what the stupid anti-vaxxers think.
You won't get any whooping cough from your puppy.
No. In fact, if it sounds like whooping cough, it's just a pleased bark. It's about how to read your dog's body language, training the family. Well, of course, that takes a lot of whipping. You need a lot of leashes. How to feed your puppy.
How to feed your puppy. Now, cats can be finicky, but dogs are notoriously not finicky.
Yeah, dogs will eat anything, including shoes. I don't see it as a problem. You know, how to feed your puppy is just stand still and let the dog eat whatever it wants to.
Any hints on the peeing issue there?
Oh, I reckon, you know, let it fly. Oh, you mean the dogs?
Yeah.
Well, it is a common problem, as they mention. The main thing is to have a newspaper handy, so if the dog does pee, then you read the newspaper.
And we have not had any luck with a sponsor. We've been pushing very heavily for the sponsor. We're looking for someone to sponsor the show, because basically if we don't get a sponsor, well, there might not be as many Bunga Bungas and Maynard might have to stop eating. I'll have to stop eating. You're okay. You've got a wife who's working. Me, I'm stuck out on my own there.
Do you have a store, a shop, a product, or a corporation?
Wow.
Well, you can get Tim and Maynard, or Maynard and Tim from Bunga Bunga, to promote this product. We will say things like, hey there, bye, and it will make your feel so much. Now, don't tell us that that isn't selling the product. So seriously, we do need a sponsor, if only because, well, otherwise we will.
You know, we could say, and if you don't buy, you could get, and no one likes that.
Nobody likes that. Oh, hang on. There's that lousy kid who always shouts at us. Oh, man, I hate that kid. I hate that kid.
I reckon he used to work for James Hardy Industries.
That one went right past me and then it came back.
I'll put away the secret language of puppies because Ferguson isn't allowed to have that for too long. And we'll go into one of the most famous and most looked forward to segments of Bunga Bunga. Bunga Bunga 12, it's time for Tim's Historical Hypothetical.
Tim's Historical Hypothetical, that's amazing.
Uh-oh, what's going to happen now?
This is where we put Tim into a actual historical situation and ask him, what would he have done? Are you ready, Tim Ferguson? The date is the 26th of January, 1808. The location, Sydney. You are the governor of New South Wales, William Bligh.
I am. I can feel it.
20 years to the day after European settlement is founded in Australia, you've been attempting to normalise trading conditions in this new colony by prohibiting the use of alcoholic spirits as payment for commodities. At 6 p.m., on that day, the 26th of January, 1808, the New South Wales Corps marches to arrest you, but are hindered by your daughter and her parasol.
What? Do that last bit again?
Let this run this one past you. And I checked this one. At 6 p.m, the New South Wales Corps marches to arrest you, but they're hindered by your daughter and her parasol. I'm thinking it's a bit like the tank in Tiananmen Square, except instead of a tank, there's a woman with a parasol.
So they dodged a little bit to the left and she dodged to the left, yeah. And they dodged to the right and she dodged to the right.
And this went on for quite some time.
And you got Bly hiding in the house.
Until eventually someone went, look over there, someone kneeled behind her, someone pushed her over and they just walked on. I think that's probably went on. So then they turn up, you're behind your bed, some say hiding, some saying trying to hide important papers, and they come to arrest you. What do you do, William Bly, Governor of New South Wales, against the Rub Corps Rebellion?
Get drunk. It's the only thing to do. Just drink all the rum so that there's nothing left, and then it's like, well, so you guys wanted to drink the rum. You had a rum rebellion, but as you can see, there's no rum left. I think Bly was a wimp. He was sitting there hiding under the bed drinking water. The entire comedy industry is based upon free alcohol for the comedians. That's why you don't have to pay them.
And just think how happy you were last time someone gave you a free drink.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Now, I know it was a police officer who had pulled me over in a car.
Yeah, not exactly the best place to have a vodka and orange, but still.
Well, he really wanted me to be busted.
This has been the incredibly informative Tim Ferguson's Historical Hypothetical.
Unbelievable hypothetical.
It's time for you for your right of reply. This is where Tim replies to something in popular culture or contemporary politics that didn't really ask him for his reply, but he's giving it anyway. Tim.
Don't expect too much.
Well, a young lady called Christy sent me an email saying, why is the government becoming more popular after all of these ridiculous crises? There was, you know, the co-payment disaster, Prince Philip disaster. There's just a whole bunch of Tony Abbott-inspired disasters, and yet his numbers are going up. Why is this so? Well, it's very simple. When polls rise, it means that knee-jerkers and the disinterested have changed their opinion. If these people had any morals or had any ethics or any political understanding, they would pick a team and stick with it. But it's hard to imagine why someone would not like Tony Abbott one week and then like him the next week simply because he stood in front of a bunch of flags. And it really is that the country and the polls are governed as a point of interest by knee-jerkers and the disinterested. And they're the ones who choose which governments we have. Which, to go back to the beginning, is why Tony Abbott stood in front of the flags. Because if the sound is down on the TV, it looks very Australian.
Tim, I think that's really made us feel a bit down about the whole thing. But at least Australia's going to Eurovision.
Oh, we're going to Eurovision. And, of course, Tony Abbott is great for comedy. He's caused a comedy resurgence.
If people could vote for TISM to go to Eurovision, how come you guys didn't put your hat in the ring?
Well, we didn't want to get in TISM's way. We thought it was a no-brainer. Thousands of people joined and signed a petition to get TISM to Eurovision. And then who walks in? Guy Sebastian. Now, I love Guy. He's a really nice guy.
Look, he is talented. He's just not Eurovision.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be happy to admit he's an incredibly uninteresting person.
Boy, you're a crock of shit!
But that's how Australia likes to win things, not through colour, but through just porridge.
Look, it's a bit like if you voted Liberal and the Socialist Alliance got in.
Exactly. They just sit around griping, hoping that someone brought some free claret. Who drinks claret anymore?
This has been Bunga Bunga 12, and I think we should go out with a song that says it all about the music business and ask that question we've always wondered.
Yeah. What was that question?
Hooray from me, Maynard.
And from me, Tim Ferguson, and for you,
Bunga Bunga!
Let me ask you a question on my mind every day. Don't know if there's an answer, but I'm gonna ask it anyway.
Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world? Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world?
are working musicians. We got to sell what we play. But most of the people we deal with would rather grab it and run away.
Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world? Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world?
They know how to paint pretty pictures. They know how to talk real fast. But when it comes time for some action, they don't do nothing but sit on their ass. Cause they're assholes, and they're never gonna change. Their assholes, and they only play the game according to their own rules. Which means musicians are nothing but tools they like to use. What fools we got around us. Doctors, lawyers, and clerks with hundreds of jobs they could choose from. How come music got all the jerks?
Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world? Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world?
Dun, 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 dun. They don't know a thing about music. Bassy and Welk sound the same. Some go for Dixie or even free jazz. If it swings too much, it's lame.
Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world? Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world?
They like to keep you begging the phone till you're sick. They think they're doing you a favor if they give you one lousy gig. Cause they're assholes, and they're never gonna change. Their assholes, and they only play the game according to their own rules. Which means musicians are nothing but tools they like to use. What fools we got around us. Ain't it the truth? Let me ask you a question, rhetorical as it may be. I don't mind if you can answer. I just got to get it out of me.
Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world? Why do the biggest assholes end up running the music world?
Bunga, bunga! On maynard.com.au. Hey, you!